Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one-coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5-quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Chilluminati Podcast, episode 259. As always, I am one of your hosts, Mike Martin, joined by the Bob Hoskins and Denzel Washington from the movie Heart Condition of L.A.
What in the world?
Whoa. Bob Hoskins, okay.
Denzel Washington, they're the main two. Buddy comedy, 1990.
Buddy comedy, 1990?
Specifically from Heart Condition? Were those two guys? Yeah,
you're specifically the characters Napoleon Stone and Jack Mooney.
All right, time out. Whoa, time out. Time out.
Jack
Alex?
Mooney is Bob Hoskins, Napoleon Stone.
Oh, you ruined it!
I thought you were about to ask for clarification on who was who.
No, I was going to ask Alex who he thought was you.
See, I tried to be good and answer it beforehand, Mathis. And I just ruined the bit. That's what I'm here
for. I want
for.
You to know I was with you both. I already knew it was going to happen. I got it right. It's all good. It all happened in my mind, but like I understood the bit, Jesse Mathis. I knew you were going to say the names of the guys, and I guessed before you said it.
What do you think the characters are?
I don't even care at this point. What's the point?
Heart Condition.
Life is Pain.
I think they're EMTs.
Yeah. All right. So who's who then? I want you to know. I want to hear who's who before I tell you the.
You already said who's
Hoskins.
Who?
Hoskins is no. Moon.
But which one of you is which one?
Oh.
Who's Bob Hoskins? Who's Denzel?
Okay, maybe who's they Jack switch. Mooney? Maybe who's they Napoleon switch. Stone? Maybe they switch hearts. And I'm Hoskins with Denzel's heart, and you're.
That's true.
Denzel with Hoskins' heart.
Oh, I'm the Denzel of this podcast for sure.
So that means Alex is a racist cop who is working with the ghost of a dead lawyer to work out a crime about who shot him.
So I'm the ghost.
You're the ghost. You're Denzel Washington. You're the ghost, and you're a racist.
Denzel's Bob. The ghost,
and you're the racist Bob Hoskins.
The racist Bob Hoskins is definitely how he wants
not
to be
true.
Remembered.
You know what I mean? The racist character that Bob Hoskins plays.
No. You said what you said.
No. I take it back. Well, welcome to the podcast.
That real was talk though. Jesse was joking about being the Denzel of the podcast. Which one of us says "my man" the most?
Definitely. My man.
Definitely Jesse, for real.
1,000.
It falls on the ears. Familiar. On a familiar sound, dusted does it fall on thine ears. Dustant it.
Tis true. Verily.
Quite.
How? Okay, for $10,000 a month, we could do an episode in Old English.
We could.
I would do
in
it.
In accurate Old English or like offensive? Like,
if I can get it to be.
Like, do you think that if there were people who like the Old English, do you think if the Old English were still around and they heard us doing our fake Old English that they'd be mad at us? And I think this is Middle English that we're talking about, right? Because Old English is.
Canterbury Tales kind of English?
Yeah, I don't think that's.
Yeah, Old English don't sound English.
I don't think that's
English. No, it sounds like totally different. You're right. More Canterbury. Yeah, talking Middle English. Yeah. Like talking about Canterbury Tales, Shakespeare kind of style of English.
What about Middle Earth-lish?
I don't know how we would do that. We just, one of us takes Orcish, one of us takes Elven, one takes Hobbit.
Not a breathy.
Yeah. Can I just be like, Flame of a Dawn?
Yeah.
That's just the whole podcast.
You shall not. I'll do it.
Yeah,
I'm down.
The Balrog of LA. That's me.
That's me trying to hand off the segue to Patreon.
If you want me to whip your ass all the way down below the earth and onto the top of a mountain.
You might regret saying that, actually. I'm going to stop you right there. You might regret saying that for wildly different reasons by the end of this episode.
What does that mean?
Oh, guys, tell you what, head over to the Patreon. It's great. We'd like to say that we're independent of any sort of algorithm because we can count on the people who really care about what they're listening to come and support us if they can. And it's great. And you get a bunch of free stuff, including ad-free episodes. You get a mini-sode every episode. You get art from Mel. It looks fucking awesome. It looks like punk show posters. It looks awesome every time. Rotten Popcorn is a show that we do that's a podcast that's about watching movies that are... It's like outsider art. It's like a film festival that's like curated by somebody who doesn't understand really why people go to the movies, like in a general sense. Like, I feel like there's like a general lack of what it is about movies that brings people to the theater. That's kind of the vibe of Rotten Popcorn. And half the movies that are on there I've never seen before. And
half the movies shouldn't be seen.
Yeah, by anyone. Half the movies shouldn't even be screened at any film festival, much less watched, live reacted to on a podcast. But you can go get episodes of them and a bunch of other stuff. And if you pay $10,000, we'll do an episode in the style of the Canterbury Tales.
God, that's like junior high school knowledge that I haven't accessed in over 20 years. I don't know.
It's about time, because here comes that big bucks. People are gonna do it. You know.
Middle English tutorial.
Who wrote it?
Who wrote what? The Canterbury Tales?
Yeah, who do you think it is?
I could not tell you.
Oh,
I
got come on. It was
was it a mix of stories by multiple people?
Michael Mathis?
Yep. Yep.
It was the dude from Knight's Tale. Come on. Everyone knows.
Heath Ledger?
No.
I'm pretty sure I know which one is which, but I always mix these two guys up.
It's the dude from Knight's Tale, you know.
Yeah. I can't remember if it's Milton or Chaucer who wrote the Canterbury Tales.
Oh, like the guy who's, yeah, I think it might be Chaucer.
I think it's Chaucer who wrote the Canterbury Tales, and I think Milton wrote...
I mean, it is Geoffrey Chaucer. But more importantly, it's actually the guy from Knight's Tale, Paul Bettany.
Paul Bettany.
He's the actual real author.
The poet, the hype man.
Yeah.
That movie is a movie I've seen more than 10 times in my life. It's insane.
It brought you to that graveyard in the middle of the night with the cape on with your D&D books that night.
Yeah.
It's the same spirit, the same drums that beat that brought you to the Knight's Tale over and over again, brought you right to the heart of that graveyard with all your spell books.
Getting patted down by the cops.
Is that, in a way, you're kind of like punk for that? You ever think about that?
In a way.
Am I?
Yeah, in a way, you kind of are punk for that.
I don't want clarification as what way and how, what way, but I'll just take it.
It's earnest. It's earnest.
Yeah, I'll take it. I'm earnestly punk. Fair enough. So, boys, it's time for another multi-parter. Last time we did some true crime in the Old West, and we're going to be staying in that time frame, but right at the end of it, more of the 1870s, moving into the early 1900s. A particular individual that has come up a few times on our Reddits and a few other in our Discord, kind of what I would consider the first real step into like a deeper level of true crime. Because today we're talking about none other than the infamous Albert Fish. Do you know who Albert Fish is?
I'm at a zero. I'm at a zero on Albert Fish.
No. Albert Fish?
Fantastic. So we're going into this. This is a truly deranged man. Albert Fish was known
unlike the other guys that we've been talking about. This guy. This guy.
You'll see what I mean.
This guy's fucked crazy up.
Though. Yeah, those other guys? No. Guys.
The closest we could compare him to and to somebody that we've covered in the past would be like a Dahmer, I think, in terms of like motivation. But you'll see what I mean. Like it's
this. Can I make a request?
Yes.
Can you say, once you've heard of Albert Fish, he makes Jeffrey Dahmer look like...
In terms of another serial killer or like...
Just no, like he makes Jeffrey Dahmer... like if
he makes Jeffrey Dahmer look like fucking, I would say like the Fonz, like a rebel, like a the really Fonz? Light rebel
okay.
who like dabbled in some nefarious behavior compared to Albert Fish, who is a fucking monster in a way that I don't think we've truly covered on this podcast.
So you're saying Albert Fish makes Jeffrey Dahmer look like the Fonz?
Yes, that's what I said.
Hey,
I only zombified a 14-year-old. Hey,
Mrs. C, I'm here to fucking kill you. Hey,
I'm gonna go jump that shark. Hey,
hey.
Albert Fish, even in his time, had many nicknames. The Gray Man, Werewolf of Wisteria, the Brooklyn Vampire, the Moon Maniac, even just the Boogeyman.
How does not one single name have to do with the fact that his name is Albert Fish? Are you kidding me?
I don't know what to tell you. That was just the parlance back in the time.
It's like Jesse Cox level unmissable in the name. It's there.
They call him Fish, the Stinky Foot.
The Stinky like, Foot.
Yeah. Like, what is the... Yeah, what is the name like Big Tuna?
Well, that's... Albert Fish wasn't his birth name. It's the name he gave himself.
He gave himself the name Fish?
Yeah. Yeah, amongst a few other kind of boring names, but Albert Fish is what he essentially just went by, you know, by the majority of the
show. Sure, I'm not gonna explain myself, but I'm gonna say that it sounds like Paul McCartney named him.
Okay, I guess I can kind of see that. Yeah,
no, man, cuckoo, ca-choo, dude, cuckoo, ca-choo.
a monstrous man named Albert Fish.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You know that feeling when you're about to score 30% off, but they want your number? Ugh. Give them your Line 2 number instead. It's a second line on your phone, perfect for nabbing promo codes without inviting spam to your party. Sign up for every discount under the sun, then block the junk texts that follow. You get all the perks, but none of the spammy baggage. More codes, less chaos. Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store and get your shopping sidekick today. Because the only thing blowing up your phone should be good deals.
Albert Fish, the American serial killer, of course, is what we're talking about. And he was a pedophile, cannibal, child murderer, rapist, molester, and many, many other things during his decades-long series of crimes. His gruesome crimes, which primarily targeted children, even back then, shocked and horrified the nation for, like I said, literal decades. He was not working in a way where nobody knew about him. Like I said, these nicknames were given to him while he was very, very active as a serial killer during this time. His modus operandi was luring in young victims with promises of treats, games, employment, babysitting for parents, and more, which always ended up only subjecting them to unspeakable acts of torture, mutilation, and often murder.
What time period was this?
1898. He starts getting active in the 1880s, early 1890s.
Can I be real with you?
Yeah.
Not once until this very moment have I ever thought about babysitters in the 1800s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like the concept
of
a babysitter has never once, obviously it happened, but never once when I was like, hold on, honey, if we're going out tonight, we need to call the babysitter. But where can we find one at this hour? You have to go down, like post up a thing.
Agatha, it's time to go to the theater, Agatha. Thank you, Samantha, for watching my children. I'll leave 12 cents out on the counter to buy yourself a roast chicken and 8 potatoes.
Do yourself a favor and go ahead and look up some pictures of Albert Fish right now. Don't read much about it. Just look up the pictures of him.
I don't want to know that this guy...
Don't say, do myself a favor, bro.
Just, this is the man that walks up and he's like, I would like to babysit your children. Like, this pasty 5 foot fucking five, like, really creepy fucking dude.
He kind of
is just
kind of
showing up.
He kind of has your eyes.
Hey, how it's true though. He kind of does.
Yo, that's a truth right there. Oh my God.
Kind of has your eyes.
I've had bags under my eyes since I was like fucking 10 years old.
Listen, let me quantify this. Let me qualify this because it's not really a burn. Cause like Mathis doesn't have the like expanding forehead that makes him look like an actual human version of Toad from the Mushroom Kingdom. Or the neck that just extends down into his shirt, like he doesn't really have a neck, and just like a couple flaps of skin connecting his head to his shoulders. You know, like that's not math. It's just that those 2 inches right there above the nostrils.
He doesn't look as bizarre as I thought he would look. Plus, he's dressed very well, so I feel like
he looks like a nobody.
Yeah, and what's interesting,
he looks exactly like a saloon barman.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. It's around that time.
He looks exactly like that.
This is around the time of Red Dead Redemption 2. Think yes. about like that.
Or the dude who would play the piano.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Same guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
A big old rag. He's wiping shit.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, trigger warning for the series. Like, there's going to be some heinous shit that we talk about. And at the very top, my main source for this episode is another book by Harold Schechter, one of the best true crime writers of our time. Deranged. It's called, it's just a phenomenal book. I've had it for a long time, and it's just worth the read if you're interested in this kind of thing. Like that late Red Dead Redemption 2 area, the guy who plays the piano at the saloon is like a chef's kiss, perfect description of what this guy looks like. And Fish was kind of like something of like a Pokemon collector of like serial killer red flags. He had sexual sadism and masochism. Religious fanaticism particularly got tied up in all of this. A fascination with shoving sharp objects and things into his body, including up his ass and his dick. Fun fact, when they arrested him, they performed an x-ray and they found 29 needles in his body. And that was not including ones that had been there for so long, we're talking years, that they had become undetectable due to degradation within his own body. We're talking small needles in the fatty parts of his body.
Due to degradation in his own body.
Yeah, he never took them out. Like, they just started, like, getting, literally, like, needles that sat in his body for a decade or two.
Until his body just took them?
Like, he would just put small needles in the fatty parts of his body, and his whole goal was to shove needles in so he couldn't get them out, and the sharp pain and discomfort he felt would get him off through the day. Jesse is a horrified look on his face. I'm just kind of waiting for it to sink in for him.
So this guy was like, he's like Pinhead. He's like a...
Well, his favorite place to stick him was his taint, so more like pin taint.
His taint, dude?
Yeah.
The weakest of all body parts, of all your whole body. He was like, you know what?
Well, not the weakest. He did
right in the
he
taint.
Did try to stick him in his balls a few times, but it hurt too much, so he didn't he stopped.
I would honestly, I don't even know. Like, you're right. You know what? This guy is making some of the others look like the Fonz.
Hey,
I was not prepared for anything you just said.
This is nothing like some of his favorite activities he would later find, like shoving a rose in his dick, prancing around the room with it in his penis until he came, and then taking the rose out and eating it.
Hey.
He also liked to eat feces. He eventually found sexual cannibalism, which will be a part two type thing. And obviously, to top it all off, was the raging pedophilia. So yeah, definitely. I think you get what I'm saying.
Jesus.
He started with
this. And he was like, call me Fish. Albert Fish.
So far one of the most bizarre parts.
And you can call me Albert Fish.
This man could have been like, they call me Albert Rose Dick. But instead he was like, Albert Fish? Why? What is the reasoning?
Yeah, pain fucker.
Yeah. That's a good question. We don't really have a reason that's why he called what he called himself. It just was. Fish was a small, quiet man who really, as you can see from the picture, kind of easily blended into the background. He's kind of just like an everyday dude at that time who you see a dime a dozen of these kinds of guy with the handlebar mustaches and all that stuff. So when his monstrous acts did become public and they finally caught him, it really shocked the public. And again, this is something we see every single time a serial killer is caught. Everybody's shocked by the mundanity of what they look like and the people that they are. And they're not these horrible monsters that they've kind of concocted in their own minds. The details of his crimes, including the cannibalism, self-harm, were so horrific that they pushed the boundaries of like what the justice system could handle at the time. Like, we had not seen the justice system handle a man like this.
The judge just comes in like, all right, where the fuck do I start, Mr. Fish? And he's like, that's right.
Also, Fish had a history of mental health problems, which clearly fed into it.
No.
And at one point, he also believed that St. John had told him to wrap himself up in a carpet and stay there for hours while he received messages from God, which he did. He wrapped himself in a carpet and laid there for hours for a while.
Like a burrito?
Like a burrito.
Like a little deviant burrito?
That's like...
Yep, like a little sexually deviant burrito.
That's like that kid in theater class who like... goes too hard into the bits And then like over like several years, you slowly realize he's like a total asshole, crazy person who has no connection to reality and is just like basically just gone as a sociopath. But they just are in theater pretending to be crazy. It's a whole, you know, that's the whole vibe here. This guy's
it's very much the vibe.
Yeah.
So obviously this, how he became the way he is until he was caught. He wasn't caught until he was 64 years old. The way.
What?
Yeah, it's insane.
Another Paul McCartney connection. Just saying.
Oh shit, nothing happens in a vacuum. So how did this man become the monster that he was? Well, first, as always, I like to look at the time era at which he was born and raised. It's the 1870s. He was born in 1875 specifically, and this is the era in which a rapid change was happening within America. The Civil War had recently ended, leaving the nation kind of grappling with the wounds of its own conflict and the challenges that Reconstruction would possess. And while the Industrial Revolution was also transforming the urban landscape rapidly at the time, much of the country was still clinging to agrarian traditions. In cities like DC, where Fish spent a lot of his early years, the signs of progress were very evident. We're talking the time where horse-drawn streetcars clattered along cobblestones with cobblestone streets with gas lamps illuminating like streets at night, and newfangled inventions like the telephone and typewriter were slowly making their way into the public sphere.
It's a Sherlock Holmes and Watson time period, basically.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, exactly that. Life in the city also had a more difficult side. Something that we don't think about at this time is that overcrowding was a huge problem as these cities were blowing up during the Industrial Age, which bred disease, poverty, and crime. Child labor was also rampant, and Fish, who was an orphan for a little bit of time, had to learn to fend off for themselves in this world. In the rural areas, life moved at a little bit of a slower pace around this time, still more governed by the rhythms of agriculture, where farmers were still kind of doing their own thing while resisting change for the most part, but it would be only a matter of time before that shit would come for them as well. And more modern times and in the industrial era kind of swept everybody up. So this is the world that he is growing up in. And he was born, like I said, on a spring day in 1875 in Washington, D.C., where he was born not Albert Fish, but Hamilton Howard Fish.
So he's still called Fish.
Yeah, he's still called Fish.
You made it seem like that he added the name Fish.
I got to leave you dangling. I got to leave you wanting. And
like a fish.
Yeah, like a fish.
The shark.
Struggling for oxygen.
His family, like I said earlier, had a history of mental illness with relatives that suffered from various afflictions that he also suffered from in his youth and adult life. His father was named Randall, and he was a well-to-do guy around this era. He was a riverboat captain who would eventually be a fertilizer manufacturer, was significantly older than his wife and mother of Albert, Ellen. We're talking, his father was 75 years old when Fish was born, which was a 43-year difference between him and his wife at the time. And something we don't know is like,
it's crazy.
We have no idea if any like cousins marrying cousins or any inbreeding was happening at the time to kind of around this era. But like, it's been a theory that's why the mental illness was getting like worse and worse, is that they may have been sticking within familial bounds when it comes to like the 43 year gap between this wife and the husband. And to further that, even Ellen ends up setting up a marriage for Albert in his teen years. So like that was still a thing as well. Like kind of
what kind of quality of life are we talking about here?
Okay.
When you mean like arranging a marriage, are you talking about like, mother, take me down to the like luncheon and show me off to the bachelor boys?
No, it was still more of a, this man has some money and like he can maybe support a family. And you're also like a drain on our resources because you're growing up.
Well, fertilizer manufacturer doesn't seem like that like cheap of a job.
But during a time where farming is still an enormous industry.
That's what I mean. I'm saying like, it seems like that would be like a kind of like you'd be maybe rich if you had that job.
Yeah, they were well to do, but it didn't last long. However well to do they were, despite that, well, back to the age disparity first, like the age disparity was huge. And this coupled with his demanding profession would end up creating like he was very distant. He wasn't around very often for his son, and his frequent absences with the age difference limited the time that Albert really had to spend with his father, because he'd come home from work and he was an old man and he's like tired.
Exactly.
And so like there was no connection there. And we also know that there was a what he knows or remembers of his father was simply his face, and that he was cold and distant, and that he was kind of cruel to Fish. And that was because even at age five, Fish was kind of an emotional kid, and he was wetting the bed still, which was something that lasted until his late teens, which is something that tends to be kind of in the history of a lot of serial killers and within the true crime sphere. But you're looking at a father from 18, he was born in like 1810, you know, like this guy.
But isn't what I'm no psychologist, but I feel like the idea of serial killers wetting the bed is more symptom of like home life.
Yes. Oh, yes. 100%.
Than just all serial killers pee themselves. Right. Like it is
absolutely
symptom of something terrible happening at home.
Almost always is because of something like an abuse or trauma that is persistent at home. We are really not aware of what like his day to day life was with his parents.
By the way, time out real quick. If you peed your bed, I'm not saying that you had abuse or trauma. I'm saying symptoms. Please don't. I don't need that letter. That's like, I peed my bed. What are you saying? I don't need that. That's not what I'm saying.
No, not at all. Please, God, I'm with you, Jesse.
How could you say that knowing that I piss myself in bed?
Not like this.
Hey.
Oh, God. But even if he had like had some time to spend with his father, it wouldn't have lasted very long because his dad had an untimely death via heart attack in Washington when Albert was just at the age of 5 years old.
But his dad was 80.
His dad was 80 years old.
So nobody was like, oh, no, oh, this old man died of a heart attack so young.
Yeah, who's still working and shit too. Like, you know, that's not very surprising.
Making shit. Is he like a business suit guy or like a guy with like a shovel with like shoveling shit?
I don't know. I have no idea. I have no clue. I mean,
if he owned the fertilizer business.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, I don't know.
I don't think he was shoveling anything.
So whatever little connection he had with like a father figure in his life was instantly gone. And
he had no chance to know this guy. No way. Yeah.
Like literally had no chance whatsoever.
There's no way where he was going to like grow old with his dad. Yeah.
Yeah. He said he remembers his dad being a stick in the mud. That was his quote from one of his interviews. Stick in the mud. Classic insult, I guess, back then.
Probably because he was fucking 75, dude.
Yeah, probably.
When you're five and you're thinking about a 75-year-old man, you're either terrified or you think, whoa, what a stick in the mud.
Yeah. In whatever opportunity Fish may have had to try and learn or emulate or like understand like social life or grow up with any sort of role model, in the wake of her husband's death, Ellen, his mother, so overwhelmed with the grief and the responsibility of raising a young child alone while also trying to find work as a single woman in this time was so difficult, she said, that she had to make the decision, the very fateful decision, mind you, to forever change, that literally changed Albert's life forever, to put him into St. John's Orphanage in Washington, D.C. at the age of 6 years old.
Whoa, she ditched the kid?
She ditched him.
Was it like pawn shop where like she'll be back later, or was it like go find another family?
Hang on. You'll find out in today's episode. You'll learn.
Good God.
So she gave him up, and this was an orphanage for like misbehaving boys. This wasn't not an orphanage for like, you know, just kids. It was specifically
St. John's school for sticking sharp shit into your penis. Well, and liking
wait,
it.
So why did she put him in the like reform school just, then?
I imagine maybe easier. Again, the details as to why are not really readily out there.
He might already have been,
she couldn't like, be I'm a widow, and that would have been enough back then.
I mean, judging by where he is at the end of his story, I would imagine he was probably a handful at the very least.
I mean, I guess.
I imagine. Like, because for whatever the case, Albert would still be, no matter what happened, if he went here or his mother kept him, we're learned is that Albert is a sociopath. He is a genuine, like, very detached from an understanding of emotions and just kind of an individual who, but again, you say also, like we've said before on the show, just because you're a sociopath doesn't mean you're a bad person. It's the environment in which he was raised, who he was put in, that really started linking, like, sadomasochism and sexual, like, gratification that end up being inextricably linked, that you could like unable to be pulled apart. And while this place seemed to be benevolent, it was St. John's Orphanage after all, this place concealed a dark underbelly of abuse and neglect within its walls. And it's here that young Albert would transform to the monster that we would know him as moving forward. or whatever your arguments are about like serial killers might be. Like I said, I truly believe if he had not gone here, we may have seen a different version of like Albert Fish that may have been kind of just a little weird and detached and maybe have some weird proclivities, but didn't go into molesting and murdering, whatever. I'm not excusing his actions. I'm just like we did with Dahmer and others, the what could have been. I'm curious what your thoughts will be by the end of this. The orphanage was harsh, wholly unforgiving, where young children were more treated like with cruelty and indifference. Fish, keep in mind, was a frail, very vulnerable, emotional boy and became a very easy target for the staff's abuse. He was subjected to frequent beatings, often for minor infractions, and was subjected to various forms of humiliation. The physical pain inflicted upon him seemed to kind of awaken a disturbing fascination. He later recounted that he began to derive pleasure from the beatings, finding solace in the pain rather than recoiling from it or pushing against it. The young Frisch, like again, being kind of timid and frail, would be also quickly become a target, not only for the staff, but the older, more aggressive boys within the orphanage as well. They delighted in tormenting him, forcing him to sit on his knees for hours at a time. And should he move, they'd come beat the fuck out of him, forcing him into verbal abuse, just often just bullying him straight up, and eventually moved into sexual abuse, forcing him to perform acts on them, other boys that he was not consenting to in any way, being raped, essentially.
This is, I mean, even though it started to get sexual there at the end, I don't think it was like, and like they're getting off on it. They're just torturing this kid, and
yep,
they keep increasing the torture to the point where it's like, well, we're going to just defile you in every way we can because you're just taking it.
And he was just taking it, correct. Yep, exactly.
And then so my assumption would be the reason why you eventually associated all that with pleasure is because that was his coping mechanism to get through all that terrible shit.
Yeah, yeah. It's very much a part, I think, is part of it. The shame and humiliation he felt also compounded all of that, obviously, and made it even worse for him. And there was nowhere he could turn. He couldn't go to the people that were running the orphanage because they were beating them too. He was fucking trapped.
Right.
The staff were either oblivious to like how he was being treated by the boys or simply indifferent, which is what I think was likely happening. They offered nothing for him. But Fish, instead of attempting to stop it or twist it or use it to manipulate his way out of it, he simply endured and began to like it. The orphanage also exposed Fish to the horrors of sexual abuse in other ways. The orphanage, like many institutions of this kind, was overcrowded as well, wholly understaffed, and the children, many of them orphaned or simply abandoned like Fish, were treated with just, again, very much like an animal just being fed and punished, and that's about it. Discipline was harsh and often just arbitrary, with corporal punishment meted out for even minor infractions. For a sensitive and introverted child like Fish was, this place instantly became a living nightmare for this guy. Fish, in one of the later interviews that he has with those after he's got caught, he talks about recalling the first time he remembers feeling like a sexual urge, and that was at the age of 6. As I've said, this orphanage kind of was a place of the highest physical punishment for the lowliest infractions, and oftentimes in the form of whipping on their backs or more. And Fish ends up recalling one time that he and 6 other boys were all being punished at the same time, so that the others who weren't actively being whipped at the moment had to watch the other boys being physically beat and hear them scream. It's here, Fish says, that the screams of the boys as they were getting hurt became something more enjoyable to him, and he really enjoyed listening to the other boys being beat and the screams that they let out. And it's here we see where I think the wires between sexual like proclivities and that physical masochism, sadism, kind of start merging in the brain, and because that's just how like it works sometimes. It's like,
yeah, sexual stuff at 6 is, that's a whole different, that's like a mental thing.
Yes. Oh, holy. The staff at St. John's equally seemed to derive pleasure, obviously, from just beating children. Beatings were a daily occurrence, often administered with belts, paddles, or anything else that came to hand. And Fish, who was small and frail, just became a daily target for them to just beat for whatever reason they felt like he was being punished for. And it was during his abuse at the hand of these nuns that his religious fanaticisms also started to begin to creep in and kind of mix into this sexual abuse soup that was being created. While the nuns were punishing and beating the boys, in the mix of their screams, they would also be preaching Bible verses at them, particularly the verses about sins of the flesh, according to Fish. Like, they were just consistently being preached at. So that was also just kind of getting thrown into the neurological mix of a developing child's brain. So the physical abuse Fish suffered had unexpected kind of effect on him. Instead of recoiling from it, he just found solace in it. The beatings became a perverse sense of comfort, a way of feeling something, I guess like anything, in a world that was cold and uncaring. And this early association of pain with pleasure would later manifest in other self-harming behaviors that we'll talk about.
Right.
But yeah, this is the moment in time where like the man is like forced to turn into somebody that he may not have.
I mean, out of all of the people that we've talked about, this is the one that seems the most like, oh, this is, they like, I don't know if like usually a lot of the time it just sort of happens. And we're like, where the hell was the moment that he like the switch flipped? This
sometimes it's like a head trauma we think might be it.
This time it feels like they straight up just like flipped the switch for him.
Yes.
This kid could have like, he was six. He could have been anything. And they were like, nah, dude, we're going to really mess you up.
Yep. Yeah, that's how I felt too. Fish in a later interview actually goes on to describe the more impactful events. One of the more impactful events rather that he witnessed, that also he seemed to encapsulate himself as a person. Who wants to be Albert Fish and read the quote? I just put it in the chat. But this is him describing an event that he saw that also encapsulated who he was.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Ugh. Spam calls. Sound familiar? Introducing Line 2. Get a second phone number right on your existing phone. Imagine. Discounts. Appointments. Online forms. Handle it all without giving out your personal number. It's like having a secret weapon against spam. And when those unwanted calls sneak through, boom. Blocked. No more interruptions. No more stress. Stay connected. Stay protected. Keep your main number safe and out of harm's way. Ready to take back your phone? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.
I'll let you volunteer. Who wants to be Fish?
I don't even know that I want. I'm not sure I want this.
I'll read it.
All right, go ahead, Alex.
I am a man of passion. You don't know what that means unless you are my kind. At the orphanage, they put me just before Garfield was assassinated. There were some older boys that caught a horse in a sloping field. They got the horse up against a fence down at the bottom of the field and tied him up. An old horse. They put kerosene on his tail and lit it and cut the rope. Away went that old horse, bursting through fences to get away from the fire. But the fire went with him. That horse? That's me. That's the man of passion. The fire chases you and catches you, and then it's in your blood. And after that, it's the fire that has control and not the man. Blame the fire of passion for what Albert H. Fish has done.
Yo, that's so messed up. And like, also sounds like something someone would say in a movie.
I know. It's crazy. This man had something else we'll talk about more in the next episode. He had a sexual writing fetish kink too as well. He loved to describe like what he wanted to do or what he had done or all these things. He very much wrote a lot of shit that we will talk about more next episode. But yeah, this is him talking about, I guess. Now, like, whether that story is real or not, because it's coming from Fish as the source, we don't really know. Sure. It's certainly akin to something Fish used to do and maybe loved to do, like torturing animals in a way. Maybe that's something he really enjoyed. But like, it's just a perfect encapsulation as to how he saw himself. But that last line at the end is something so many serial killers do. Blame the fire. Don't blame me. It's not my fault. It's the fire of passion. It just caught me, and I can't be blamed for that.
He also third persons.
Yes.
For what Albert H. Fish has done.
Yeah.
H. Fish has done. Albert, that ain't even your name, bitch. Come on now. We already learned. It's like Harrison or something. I already forgot.
It's Hamilton.
Hamilton. Yeah, there you go. It's just like, come on.
Hamilton now. H. Fish.
However, this story, whether real or not, also seemed to inspire something, an activity that Fish liked to do at home by himself. Fish would love to get home, strip down naked, take a long piece of cloth, and then soak it in kerosene.
No.
Then he'd clench it tightly between his ass cheeks, light it on fire, and run around the house until he, like, wildly run around his house until he came.
No, stop. This did not happen.
According to Fish, that's exact some that's something he did.
Hey.
It gets more sad every time. Beyond the physical abuse, Fish also witnessed and experienced sexual violence at the orphanage. But how long do you think he was at that orphanage before he left? Or he finally got the fuck out of there?
Till he was 18 years old.
Yeah. When did he go in? Five, six?
Six. He was in at six.
I guess he was in there till at least, like, probably like 10.
Okay, cool. The orphanage, last bit about the orphanage, he also didn't really get any education there. They didn't give him any, like, educational opportunities. It was very much a prison in a lot of ways. So he also wasn't being fostered intellectually. So luckily, Fish did eventually get out of that orphanage.
14.
He left when he was 9 years old.
Nope, never mind.
3 years he was there. And the reason he left is because his mom came back.
Oh.
She had finally gotten a job and decided that she could now raise him. So she came back and took him home. And now she was going to be a mom. Totally a great mom to a totally not fucked up 9 year old boy who is about to try to figure out how to be like a human.
Can you imagine the resentment of, like, you left me?
Yeah. Dude, it's fucked.
I guess it just was just darker in general.
I can't. I imagine he was furious, but he didn't kill his mom. To be fair, he never killed his mom. He never killed his mom or killed any of his family members for that matter. After returning home, just a few years later, Fish goes on to say that the next individual who had an impact on his sexual proclivities would be a boy at the age of 12. He claims that he had met this boy who would go on to introduce him to a couple of other things that he learned to love.
Who's 12?
Particularly, this boy taught him how to drink piss and eat shit and love it.
What? What the fuck are you talking about? Wait, okay, hold on.
And this boy, which we never get his name, all we know is he was a telegraph boy. And I looked that up, and telegraph boys are boys like ride around on their bikes with telegraph messages. They're kind of like proto-mailmen.
I mean, there were mailmen at the time, so he would be like...
Yep. The boy, maybe around the same age, maybe a little older.
He was like, check out your own piss and shit. That's the good stuff.
Didn't explain how it happened. He said it was just through him. He introduced him to drinking piss. Maybe he got peed on and shit on. God. And like he got to...
This is like... A made up guy from like a D&D who's just like, I'm called Mr. Shit. I had the worst life ever. I do the worst shit ever. Look, what do you think? When I was 12 years old, I met a proto mailman on the street, and he taught me how to eat my piss and shit.
Mailmen existed. We gotta redo that. Mailmen existed though, guys.
He was a telegraph boy. He was called the telegraph boy. Yeah,
and so that would be like
proto mail boy. 12 year old proto mail boy. He eats his own delicious shit. Awful.
You know, the worst part about this is the more you talk about it, the more in my mind I'm trying to justify why a person would do this. Besides, like, they're just bonkers. I'm like, well, maybe he was, you know, there wasn't a lot of food. And he was like, well, I got to eat something. Honestly, that's where I'm at, trying to justify why the proto male boy. I'm like, why on earth would a man do this?
If you think about it, there's no way your own shit can be good for you.
No, it can't be. It's literally what your body's getting rid of.
I have to look. I'm going to fight this, and I'm sure someone's going to let me know that there probably is people out there. There's probably people out there who, like, I love the way it tastes. It's so I'm good. But I have to imagine it's the fetish isn't pee and poo taste good. It's humiliation.
Yeah,
look, I'm not trying to yuck anyone's yum. I'm just saying, like, is this really about yum?
It's not about yum. It's about coming in his pants constantly. Everything ends with him jizzing in his pants, dude.
Was he 12 years old when he was running around with a rag in his ass too?
He doesn't mention his age at that point. I imagine that was later in life when he was living alone and not with his mom.
Where is this going? Where is this? Where does this end? Where is the end game? What happens?
He gets caught at some point. I told you.
Does this all come together? He does all this stuff.
He gets caught in his 60s, though, dude.
He's 64.
He led a full life of just nonsense.
Awful, awful, heinous shit. And it gets worse.
Proto mailman.
However, at the age of 12, after learning that he loved being a human toilet, The years continued to go on, and he started spending a lot more time at like local bathhouses for men. And we're talking like gay bathhouses. At the very least, Fish was bisexual, if not fully homosexual. But this is at a time where that shit was not allowed to be talked about ever. So he was going to secret, tiny little bathhouses. And eventually he himself became a street corner prostitute as well.
Like as a 12-year-old?
More like a 14, 15-year-old.
Okay.
Now, he would eventually find himself working in a brothel where he was, maybe fittingly, the flagellation specialist, both for giving and for receiving.
And here we are at the Balrog reference. All right.
I guess here we are. Fuck. Hey. I didn't even know. Fuck.
Hey,
it is.
J.R.R. Tolkien, you're probably morally kind of a piece of shit, but this bud's for you right now. Hey. you and you.
I don't know. Yeah, he was the flagellation specialist at the brothel.
I don't like that. You know what? Fuck. Everything you've said so far, though, about this dude, I don't know. I'm so.
And yeah, see what I mean when I said this is like the real first step into
so
like the deeper true crime.
Have you ever seen Clue? Have you ever seen the movie Clue?
Yes.
Where Mrs. White's like, flames? Flames? That's where I'm at. I am so just overwhelmed by everything that's happening.
Whiplash. I'm not trying to make another Balrog pun here, but I have whiplash. I'm going from Alex the Gray to Alex the White. That's what's happening to me right now. I died and I'm alive again with a lot more serious business to take care of.
During his time as a flagellation specialist, I have conflicting information that he's either doing it in the DC area or he had traveled to Brussels for a couple of years and was doing it over there.
Well, of course.
But regardless of whether he was in DC or Brussels during it, at the age of 17, he would cease doing that and come back to the US or move to just a different city if he was already in the US. Where else but what would become his home forever? New York City, baby. Here, he would become a house painter. Which is his profession, that this is the profession he would have for the rest of his life from this point on, a house painter.
Do you think, real quick, time out.
Yeah.
Do you think that there was a moment where he came back from Brussels or wherever, and he had gone through his like insane childhood, and he was like, I gotta stop this. I need to be brought back from the brink. And then he tried painting and he was like, F it.
If he had that thought, F it came real fucking quick. Like, F it came like
immediately? Like
almost immediately. Oh.
Never mind. I always want to like try to be like, well, maybe he could have been a good guy. No.
In fact, the reasons that he took on this job quickly became apparent. It was a job that had obviously some regular work, but more importantly, it would allow Fish to get close to people's families, learn their homes, ingratiate himself with other people's, and building trust with a community that would be betrayed quietly over and over again. We're also talking, he took jobs at places like the YMCA and other orphanages on top of the family homes that he was working. The man surrounded himself with what he fucking loved, kids. It's all he cared about. He took jobs for people's homes who had tuberculosis as another example of him targeting more vulnerable people as well. Usually people who was adult or like someone within the family had kids and they had tuberculosis and he would go work for them.
Boy, I would love someone who has a psychology degree or an actual psychologist, because it sounds like what you're saying to me is
now he's targeting.
He is now. So he spent his youth being humiliated and degraded and like all sorts of stuff was done to him. And now as an adult, he is going to unleash that on people because it was done to him. So he's going to do it to kids.
Correct. And initially it starts just with, and I don't mean to underplay this, but just to give you an idea of like the baseline. It's just, quote, just molestation. Like, initially, that's all he's doing. He's not physically hurting kids. He's not actively, like, hurting kids.
Right, because he has to build up to the actual...
That all builds.
Right, yes. And so he's going to start with something that is...
easier to get away with.
Terrible, but, like, on his levels of terrible, it's easing into terrible. Right.
Correct. Yep, that's something, again, we've seen. Another reason that we, you know, he would call it a personal benefit of taking on this job was the dress code. Painters back then wore overalls for the most part, except he took that and exploited the fuck out of it. And that was the only thing he would wear on every job. Nothing underneath, no shirts, no underwear, nothing. He was only in overalls all the time. And when he was working, and that meant he could go from, oh, hello, to, oh, no, real fucking quick and be naked within the matter of seconds.
What a thing to keep in mind.
Yeah, just to keep, yeah, while he's doing this.
What a thing to keep in mind in general.
Yeah. If you've hired somebody who's wearing overalls and it looks like they're lacking anything else, maybe send them home.
No, I'm not even, I just mean like, how fast can I get out of this?
Oh. You think he stood in front of the mirror and like fucking practice speed?
Yeah. What's my dress to Nike ratio? How good is this outfit? Where does it rate on the Google chart?
You think he had that shit like just like memorized, unbuckling the overalls in like 2 seconds? That shit was on the ground. You blink and he's.
If it was now, he'd have a fucking Google sheet running on Reddit.
It's true.
People be like giving him upvotes and shit, and then they find out he's the guy who like fucking eats piss and shit and kills people. And they're like, oh, Reddit's crazy.
Just wait. So this is all by 1890 now. All right. We're like 18.
Just wait.
It gets worse. Don't worry about it. Just wait.
He had a chance to bring the dinosaurs back and he didn't do it. And then he shot Mother Teresa's twin.
So he's around the age of 20 now, moved to fully into New York City. And it was here that his life took another deeply sinister turn. Obviously, he was engaging in prostitution, not a big deal, but he was also beginning to prey on young boys at this point, most of whom were under the age of 6. Despite these heinous acts, though, his personal life seemed outwardly normal. And in 1898, his mother arranged for him to marry a woman by the name of Anna Marie Huffman, a woman 9 years his junior. So he would have been 1898. He's 28, so she would have been 19. And together, they had 6 children. Albert, what? Anna, Gertrude, Eugene, John, and Henry.
The fishes.
The fishes, baby.
Do you and call the them fishes. The fishes?
Where did he find time to do all this dick torture? What the hell?
We're building to the dick torture. We're not there
Where
yet.
Where did he find the time? Actually, never mind. I forget. During this time period, he just probably was like, honey, you deal with the 6 kids. I've got to go dick torture.
He was still doing crimes, though, something that he was also was like he was kind of just a petty criminal on top of it as like a hobby. And in 1903, he was actually arrested for grand larceny and was subsequently incarcerated at Sing Sing Prison. But this didn't curb any of his disturbing impulses. And
what year? Wait, hold on.
1903.
And he got married when?
In 1898, so 4 years
in. And they had 6 kids in that time?
I don't know if they had him in that time. She didn't leave him yet. He would come out of prison. He got out of prison. She stayed married with him.
Holy shit. Wow.
Yeah, he later recounted a pivotal incident involving a male lover who took him to a wax museum after he got out. And there, Fish became fascinated by a display featuring the bisection of a human penis, igniting a new obsession with sexual mutilation that also gets
cutting people's penises in half,
including his own.
He cut his penis in half.
What?
Well, no, he didn't cut his penis in half. I'm talking mutilation. I'm talking about mutilating aspect of it all. Yeah. He liked the bisection of a male penis, and he said,
"There's muscles in my body that are clenching that I did not know could clench right now."
I don't know if it is reading via audio, but the uncomfortable nature both Alex and I feel about. Like Mathis is just telling this crazy story, and Alex and I are like just slowly sinking into our own bodies.
You're going through what I went through about 10 years ago when I first discovered this individual, and I was like, "What the fuck?"
Slowly back over.
We need like 6 different intros to this episode that are just like, "Please, please,
Dean, can you do a little something for
please
us?"
Please don't listen.
We gotta go back. We gotta go back and say, "Hey, you probably should skip this one. This one's not for
listen
you.
To this episode.
I'm almost positive this episode's not for you." Go turn back now. If you pay us $10,000 a month, we'll.
If you're in the car
one.
And you're driving somewhere, turn on some tunes, man. Turn this off.
Yeah. I'm gonna do some aftercare for you boys after this episode.
If you're at home. Cleaning your apartment? Hey, turn this off and just clean in silence. It's better than this.
Yeah. Go for a drive instead. Leave it playing, but don't be in the house.
There you go.
We still need the view.
Actually, on advice of counsel, do not leave this playing in your house, then leave. So if anyone comes to your house and this is just playing in the background and no one's there, that's the creepiest shit ever.
That's when he learned that pissing and shitting was delicious from the proto male boy.
Oh, fuck. Oh, man, we're not done yet, boys. We got more to go. It's like me making you watch a Neil Breen movie.
I must stress how absolutely embarrassed I am for the entire human race. Like, all of us. I'm so, like...
One of us did this. One guy did this. I'm shook on representing humans anywhere.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not sure we deserve to keep going, y'all. I feel like time out.
If there was Space Olympics, I think they'd probably disqualify us over this. This is nothing next to the fucking blue guy who you can kind of see his dick, kind of, maybe. This is nothing compared to that.
I told you he's going to be dumber.
You mean Dionysus?
Huh? Yeah. I mean, it wasn't really Dionysus. It wasn't really Dionysus. It looked like me. But, you know, you can kind of see his dick a little bit. That's nothing compared to this.
Oh, gosh. I did not
think. It really does look like Alex. I didn't think
you would be here with this episode. I have thought you guys would be in, like, shock silence.
Oh, no, we're in shock, all right. This is dealing. This is cope.
You know that when the spaceship comes and they're standing on top of the skyscraper and they look up and it blows up the Los Angeles? That's because they heard about this guy. They came and they said, he did what? And they came over.
Like, we got to end it. Fucking, we got to end this. So we got to keep moving. Around 1910, while he was working a job in Wilmington, Delaware, Fish encountered a man by the name of Thomas Bedden, a 19-year-old man. Fish brought Bedden to his residence, and they began a sadomasochistic relationship that lasted over 2 weeks, where he didn't leave the home. The extent of Bedden's consent at this point is wildly uncertain, mostly because it seems like Bedden was mentally... he had the mind of a child. I don't know what the right word would be for that. I apologize. But he was much more, a little slower than Fish was. And Fish took advantage of that wildly. But Fish's confession later on suggested that Bedden was intellectually disabled. And it just made the whole thing sound way, way, way worse. It was just shy of 2 weeks. After 10 days, Fish took Bedden to an old farmhouse. After 10 days of meeting him, he took him to the farmhouse, and over 2 weeks, he subjected him to the torture, culminating in the horrific act of severing half of Bedden's penis in half to mimic the art at the wax museum he had seen.
Like, he cut the front half of his penis into two, like a banana?
Yep. And Fish chillingly recalled, I shall never forget his scream or the look that he gave me.
Why you gotta put that little stink on the voice like that?
Yeah, why'd you guys say it like that?
I was trying to be Fish.
I shall never forget his scream.
I'm just trying to
sounds like a Eurojank horror game.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
What if I told you that right now, millions of people are living with a debilitating condition that's so misunderstood, many of them don't even know that they have it? That condition is obsessive compulsive disorder, or OCD. I'm Dr. Patrick McGrath, the Chief Clinical Officer of NOCD. And in the 25 years I've been treating OCD, I've met so many people who were suffering from the condition in silence, unaware of just what it was. OCD can create overwhelming anxiety and fear around what you value most, make you question your identity, beliefs, and morals, and drive you to perform mentally and physically draining compulsions or rituals. Over my career, I've seen just how devastating OCD can be when it's left untreated. But help is available. That's where NOCD comes in. NOCD is the world's largest virtual therapy provider for obsessive compulsive disorder. Our licensed therapists are trained in exposure and response prevention therapy, a specialized treatment proven to be incredibly effective for OCD. So visit NOCD.com to schedule a free 15-minute call with our team. That's NOCD.com.
According to Fish, he initially planned to kill Bedden, dismember his body, and then take it home. However, fearing that the hot weather would attract attention, he decided against it, and instead Fish attempted to treat his wounds by pouring peroxide all over it.
What on his dick, dude?
Yep.
Not only well-adjusted, but pragmatic as well.
He then wrapped it up in a Vaseline-covered handkerchief and left him a Vaseline-covered $10 bill as a goodbye before leaning in and kissing him goodbye and taking the first train home back to New York, never going back. So we don't know what happened to Bedden after that.
He just was like, fuck off, bro. Bye.
Because he never learned of what happened, we don't really know what became of him. We don't know what happened to Bedden after that. So yeah, he quickly was like, that wax museum, I'm going to try that. Oh God, he's screaming, got to go. And he left, never returning. Then, in January 1917, Albert Fish's life took another tumultuous turn when his wife, Anna Marie Hoffman, left him after nearly 20 years.
You know what? It took her time, but thank God. Get out of there, girl.
And
get your groove back. Children. Get out of there. That guy.
She left him for a handyman who had been boarding with the family by the name of John Straub.
Yo, Straub, my dude, get her out of there.
Rescued that woman.
Escape.
Yep, he was the worst part is she didn't take the kids.
What?
She didn't take the kids. She ran and left the care of his six kids to him alone. He raised them. And he struggled to, try to raise them. And for what it's worth, his kids kept in contact with him till the day he died. Even after knowing all the horrible crimes, they talk about him like he was a good father, whether or not he was, or he was just, trauma. You don't know.
But do you think that part of his neuroses, his whatever was wrong with him, is that he takes out his childhood trauma on others because others did it to him, but he fiercely protects his kids? Because he doesn't want that shit to happen to them, kind of vibe?
I think it might be more superficial than that, because Bundy did the same thing. And I think it's more of the game of being like, I can be normal. I can be good.
Oh, that's probably true. Where, if your kids rat you out, you're definitely going to jail. But if you make them
on your side, they're there to defend you forever.
I'm not on that level. I'm not on that. I didn't go there. Costume. I wasn't thinking mind games.
I've been in the true crime. Yeah. You'll get there one day.
It's like a costume. You got to keep it.
Yeah. You got to keep it up. Batman is the real personality, but the evil version, of that idea.
Yeah. I'm not going to equate this guy to Batman.
No.
He's the Fish.
The emotional and financial strain was huge for him. And Fish told a newspaper that his wife had taken nearly every possession the family owned when she left. This seemed to push Fish further into his madness, and he began experiencing auditory hallucinations, claiming this is where he heard the voice of John the Apostle instructing him in one instance where he was told to wrap himself up in a carpet, believing that he was following the divine orders of God, and sit there while listening to a God's instructions. Around this time, Fish's propensity for self-harm began to skyrocket. He started embedding the needles into his groin, abdomen, a practice that would be confirmed years later with the x-rays that I talked to you about, where they found 29 needles lodged in his pelvic region.
Oh yeah, I wanted to say, I saw this picture on Google Images when I was like Googling him, and I thought it was like a sort of like fucked up artist's representation of his face screaming. But actually when I clicked on it, it was an x-ray of his pelvis with a bunch of needles stabbed into it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's fucked up.
Yeah, it's fucked up. And of course, his self-mutilation didn't stop there. He frequently struck himself with a nail-studded paddle, causing severe injuries. He additionally would insert wool-soaked lighter. Oh, yeah. And this is also where he started the soaking the cloth in kerosene, shoving into his ass, lighting it on fire, running around. This is all after the wife left. This is where this shit fucking just kind of took on. Despite his extreme self-abuse, Fish was not known to have physically attacked or abused his own children, though they did witness a lot of dad's weird habits. He did involve them in some of his masochistic rituals. He did encourage his children and their friends to hit him with these nail-studded paddles that he used on himself, turning his home into kind of more of a disturbing, perverse punishment scene all the time. So he did involve his kids, definitely traumatizing them, but that he never hurt them. And that's something they always clung to. these behaviors underscore his.
You kept that information out.
Because I got to get there in the story, man. I have it all scripted out.
Way more messed up. Okay.
But by 1930, all his kids were grown up and he was back to living on his own. And Frisch was free of any sort of relationship, familiar or otherwise, chaining him down and having other potential witnesses to some of the more perverse things that he had fantasized about. So Fish joined one of those matrimonial agencies of the time, a connection service for more like divorced folk or single folk who have families or kids. And he quickly met a widow with her own children and struck up a casual kind of conversation via letter until after some time, he was invited over finally one night to meet them. And on this very first night, seemingly Fish was quote unquote normal, if maybe a little weird and reserved, but otherwise seemingly normal. And then he got pretty friendly with her that night and the children that night. So he was invited to come back the next night. And Fish, in his, confidence, began his games with the kids. Very specifically, he started with a game called Buck Buck, How Many Hands Up?
What?
Do you boys want to? called Buck Buck, How Many Hands Up? I'll just go into it. To begin this game.
Why don't you just go right in?
To begin this game, Fish would head into the bathroom, disrobe everything but his brown shorts, and come back out. So just wearing shorts, shirtless, socks, shoes, all gone. Next, he'd hand each of the kids a paintbrush and would instruct them of the rules. The rules were very simple. The kids would take their free hand and hold their hands behind their back and then put up as many fingers as they wanted at a random number. Fish would then have to guess how many fingers they were holding up. And if he was wrong, they would have to spank Fish with the paintbrush for the difference between his guess and their actual answer. So if they held up three and he guessed one, he would get spanked twice. Got it?
Yep, got it.
No, I mean, I heard you.
Cool. Maybe so, to your own surprise, Fish was really bad at guessing the numbers for some reason.
What?
All the time. Just crazy. Awful at it. And this would be a game that they would play every night for an hour for days in a row, like 2 or 3 days in a row before the next game came along that he was excited to introduce them to. And this one was called Sack of Potatoes Over.
What?
Yep. Sack of Potatoes Over. That's what it was called. In this game, Fish, who was still just in his shorts, would have the kids climb up of him. He would then stand up, slope his body forward a bit, and the kids would have to slide down his back, all while they dragged his nails down his back, scratching him. In one instance, he said he tried to have the kids drag needles down his back, but they weren't too good at it and it hurt too much, so we stopped them from doing it.
Like,
the look on Jesse's face for listeners is soulless shock.
I mean, I just...
But it's, you know, could be worse.
It's like a villain. It's like a villain from like a comic book. That's like, you know how evil I am. This is what I used to do.
Yeah. It's like, you know, those movies that are, man, usually made in like 1970s Italy that are designed
those
to be
like muscle dudes, like really
just like designed to be
gory.
Extremely graphic and terrible.
Yeah.
For the sake of shock.
Like Suspiria?
Not
like
Suspiria. Suspiria is one of the finest films ever made.
Well, it's Italian horror, right?
Yeah, that's true. These are like schlocky. Yeah,
those movies. Like,
gotcha.
This is the cinematic equivalent of Human Centipede vibes.
Yeah,
like
it's
just awful, and it's everything about it. I'm just like, yeah, cool, okay, yep, that's terrible. Mm-hmm, that's also terrible. No, that's also terrible. And the entire time, I'm also thinking like the mom's just like this crazy guy.
Yep,
look at him. Like that's
yep. Dude, hang on. Just hold on. Hang on. After a few days of Sack of Potato Over, a new game was introduced. And at this point, I guess he just got bored of making up names on the spot.
Fucking horrible game name, by the way, also. I just want to say, Sack of Potato Over sucks.
Yeah, it sucks. We didn't get a name for this one. I guess he just gave up naming it. This was, so the next game he introduced.
This one's called Fuck Game.
Yeah. Now, this one, he brought over a sack of needles. And he told the
loves
kids
a sack, this guy.
Yeah, a lot of sacks. He said, this game is about finding out how many needles you can stick under your fingernails.
What?
Literal torture.
Zero. None.
For the kids, you can guess that lasted about one attempt before they said, that hurts. No. And they stopped. So they stopped.
I'm good.
That he kept playing by himself until both of his hands were covered in blood. And this is testimony from the kids in court. So this is where we're getting this from. Yeah, he had both of his hands covered in blood as he had needles sticking out of them. Fun game.
I would not have even went to court with this guy. Like I would like I would have just been like he was crazy. He was insane.
I gotta say to the ladies out there, don't let anyone tell you that like you gotta stick by your man. Or you got like sometimes
or you can't do better than him, or
just walk away. Like this, they weren't even married, and she's like, "We go on crazy dates. Sometimes he sticks needles under his nails." And what do I like? I would have been like, "No."
Well, if this is a lot of fish, no,
in the sea,
Alex. Yeah,
it's just the worst joke I've ever made. I said, "There's a lot of fish in the sea." If you guys must know what I said.
Oh, nice. I like
a lot of fish.
Speaking of fish, back to him. Yeah. So
hey.
So this is and then no matter what game they played that night, by the way, there was always a tradition after they were done playing the game. The game always lasted about an hour. After whatever game they were playing for the night ended, to end the night, he always went into the bathroom where he took off all his clothes initially. He would take all of the toilet paper off of the toilet paper roll, bundle it up in the center of the room, and then light it on fire.
Why?
Yo, if I was this woman, I would have been like, my kids have to shit. What are you doing?
Like, then what? Like, then what?
That in particular, that testimony comes directly from the widow at court.
Oh, this guy sounds intolerable.
Like, then what? Like, once you do that, what? Like, once you have a pile of fucking burning toilet paper in the middle of your room burning, what? Then what? You put it out? You just go over and put it out?
Until it was done. Yeah, he would. He just, until it was out.
They wouldn't smell that shit. They'd be like, oh, thank God you stuck those nails in me. Now I'm going to go in the bathroom, kids. Ignore the smells. That's just my poops.
Like, well, here's the thing. We don't know if the toilet paper he lit on fire was used or not, but we do know one of the things he was doing to other widows and other people, not this one in particular, but other widows around that time, was before leaving, he would go shit secretly somewhere in their house and leave it for them to find. And he would get off on it later that he left a shit and they were probably cleaning it up.
What the fuck? What the fuck?
I'm sorry. I know it's audio. The silence is really like there's just the stunned face. So alternating between games and bundles of fire. This went on for 10 days, by the way. All this ramp up for all three games. This was less than 2 weeks. This was 10 days. All this happened before. Finally, the widow put an end to their courtship and agreed to marry him.
No! No!
Why? Why?
You see those things online where like dudes are like, this we gotta end no fault divorce. Some marriages.
This man is a house painter who wears naked.
Kids need both parents in the picture. Y'all, sometimes it's okay to leave a person. I'm just saying, like. Sometimes it's okay to say no. Like, I'm just so
get out, bro.
Upset with, again, Alex is right. The Independence Day aliens, they knew what was up. They were like, we come in peace, dog. We're here to wipe out your society.
We're here for Albert Fish, and we don't trust any of you with being cool after him.
I understand.
Get out. Just holy crap. It's okay. His new marriage wouldn't last super long before the wife realized something was kind of just not quite fully.
Oh, my God.
And so
it took her till they were married to be like, something's up with this guy. This is weird.
It wasn't. And then it didn't. They took her a little bit. It's at this point around. We're looking at the year 1919. We're just around this era now. Fish seemingly stopped any semblance of attempting to hold back. And while we have some evidence that Fish's first assault on a child was around 1910, it wasn't around until 1919 that like he started getting really into like his more fucked up shit. He began to act on his sinister impulses, culminating in a brutal stabbing of another intellectually disabled man in Georgetown. Fish's choice of victims revealed a disturbing but familiar pattern within serial killers. He preyed upon those he believed society would simply overlook. Mentally disabled, right. The marginalized, those who would vanish out without trace, the lesser dead, as we've talked about many, many times. And driven by his twisted desires, Fish sought out young children, sometimes even paying other boys to lure younger kids to him that he could then just take and grab.
Fuck me.
He would eventually get an apartment after his wife left him, and his apartment became a very much a chamber of horrors, filled with his so-called quote-unquote implements of hell, which were a meat cleaver, a butcher knife, and a small handsaw, tools that would see unimaginable cruelty of use. And in the summer of 1924, Fish's predatory gaze fell upon 8-year-old Beatrice Keel, playing innocently on her family's farm on Staten Island at first, with promises of money and a fabricated errand he needed help with. Fish tried to coax Beatrice away, but her vigilant mother intervened, chasing off Fish before from their property. Fish retreated, only to try again later, seeking refuge in the Keel's barn, trying to hide. But Beatrice's father discovered him and drove him away a second time. Fish's continued to keep, like, not attempting with this particular child, but kept descending into his insanity. And by 1924, the 54-year-old was consumed by psychosis, believing that God himself was commanding him to inflict pain and suffering upon children, because if he didn't, they were going to grow up to become harlots and whores, and he was stopping them from growing up to a life of sin. His depravity basically knew no bounds. And according to him, the voices in his head grew louder and more insistent, urged him on a path of unimaginable cruelty, and he saw himself as an instrument of divine retribution, a twisted prophet carrying out what he deemed was a higher purpose. And as his obsession with children intensified, so too did his methods. He carefully planned his attacks, studying his victims, learning their routines, and waiting for the perfect moment to strike. His apartment became just a lab of insanity, filled with tools of his twisted desires, and he experimented with different forms of torture, finding pleasure and suffering from his young victims. There wasn't really a certain type of killer we can really assign to Albert Fish. He seemed to enjoy every aspect and every bit of the process of killing, including the mutilation and the use of the corpse after he had already killed his victim. He truly was like an every serial killer. The more he indulged, the more insatiable, again, it came. It's like any serial killer, the cooling off period started to become shorter and shorter and shorter. And he was no longer content with simply killing his victims. He wanted to begin inflicting maximum pain and humiliation before he took their lives. He saw himself as a master of his craft, so beyond the intelligence of the police that he started writing taunting letters to the victims' families and the cops, because no one was on his trail. Nobody could find, like, figure out who this guy was. Fish's victims were not just numbers to him, they were objects to his fascination. And while we know he killed somewhere around 15 kids, according to one of the Supreme Court's judges, they believe that number is likely somewhere in the high 20s of the number of kids he actually killed all through his time. And before his infamous abduction of Grace Budd, which is where we'll be working toward with next episode, he sought to test his gruesome tools on a young boy named Cyril Quinn. Fish lured Cyril and his friend into his apartment with the promise of sandwiches and playful wrestling. And playful wrestling began on Fish's bed before the boys accidentally uncovered the horrifying truth. As they were playing, the mattress came a little off of the mattress the holder of the bed, or whatever you call it, mattress frame, there it is. And underneath the mattress, they found the bone saw, the knives, rope. And they immediately became terrified, jumped up, and just fucking ran out, luckily saving their own lives in the process. Fish is fully unhinged, completely unbuckling his darker impulses and letting them free, or burning like that horse, as he once said. And we watch him devolve into the worst monster I've probably read about in a long time. And that's where we're going to pick up next week with part two of the story of Albert Fish.
I'm genuinely upset there's a part two. I must stress to everyone listening, you don't have to listen next week.
You don't even have to listen to this.
Yeah, yeah. You don't even have to listen to this.
There's still time to turn this off before it's over.
Yeah, 100%. You don't want to hear him sticking about more needles in his bodies?
I'll tell you what, after hearing all this, I'm going to say, this guy was a real jerk.
Got him.
Shoutouts. If you know, you know.
Thank you all so much for listening and supporting the show. Before we go, hey, if you are into anime and want to check out a podcast about anime, go check out Anime Cult with myself, Dodger, and Indie Mouse, part of the Chilluminati family. We've got a new episode popping up. Well, it should be actually up by the time you're listening to this. Go check out Star Wars New Canon Book Club. That's been our old Canon Book Club, rather, because you guys have been popping out episodes recently as well.
We do have those episodes.
That's true. We got a couple.
What was the most recent one about?
We got a couple popping out right now. The last one was about the newspaper strips. It was pretty crazy. Alan Moore wrote some Star Wars for Marvel Comics in UK that we're about to cover in a week or so. And then we got more comics on the horizon. It's like Star Wars comic. There's like a whole other multiverse that happened before the canon that we thought was the old canon. It's crazy. So,
and it's like a palate cleanser after an Albert Fish episode. We'll be back next week. Thank you all so much for supporting
us. Probably a talking fish in Star Wars.
Yeah, it probably is.
Yeah.
We appreciate you. We love you. Bye.
Bye.
Anyway, me and my wife were sitting outside indulging on our porch one night, enjoying ourselves. I needed to go to the bathroom, so I stepped back inside, and after a few moments, I hear my wife go, "Holy shit, get out of here." So I quickly dash back outside, and she's looking up at the sky in awe. I look up too, and there's a perfect line of dozen lights traveling across the sky.
To modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You know that feeling when you're about to score 30% off, but they want your number? Ugh. Give them your Line 2 number instead. It's a second line on your phone, perfect for nabbing promo codes without inviting spam to your party. Sign up for every discount under the sun, then block the junk texts that follow. You get all the perks, but none of the spammy baggage. More codes, less chaos. Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store and get your shopping sidekick today. Because the only thing blowing up your phone should be good deals.